but then he added quickly, "Is it the shop? Is it that?"
"A bit," said Samantha. "But I hate living in Padfoot. I hate living on top of your parents. And sometimes," she said slowly, "I hate waking up next to you."
She thought he might get angry, but instead he asked quite calmly,
"Are you saying you don't love me anymore?"
"I don't know," said Samantha. He seemed thinner in his open-necked shirt. For the first time in a long while, she thought she'd glimpsed somebody familiar and vulnerable inside the aging body across the table. "And he still wants me," she thought, with wonder, recalling the crumpled face in the mirror upstairs. "But I was glad," she added, "the night that Barry Fairbrother died, that you were still alive. I think I dreamt you weren't. And I woke up, and I know I was happy when I heard you breathing.
And that's all you got to say to me, is it? You're glad I'm not dead."
She had been wrong to think that he was not angry. He had simply been in shock.
"That's all you've got to say to me. You get absolutely ratted at my father's birthday."
"Would it have been better if it hadn't been your bloody father's party?" she shouted, his anger igniting hers. "Was that the real problem? That I showed you up in front of Mummy and Daddy? You were kissing a 16-year-old boy! Maybe he'll be the first of many!"
yelled Samantha, getting up from the table and slamming her mug down in the sink. The handle came off in her hand.
"Don't you get it, Miles! I've had enough! I hate our fucking life and I hate your fucking parents!
You don't mind them paying for the girl's education!
I hate you turning into your father in front of me!"
"Absolute bollocks. You just don't like me being happy when you're not."
"Whereas my darling husband doesn't give a shit how I feel."
"Plenty for you to do round here, but you'd rather sit at home and sulk."
"I don't intend to sit at home anymore, Miles."
"Not going to apologise for getting involved with the community."
"Well, I meant what I said. You're not fit to fill his shoes."
"What?" he said, and his chair fell over as he jumped to his feet, while Samantha strode to the kitchen door.
"You heard me," she shouted. "Like my letter said, Miles, you're not fit to fill Barry Fairbrother's shoes. He was sincere."
"Your letter," he said.
"Yep,"
she said breathlessly, with her hand on the doorknob.
"I sent that letter. Too much to drink one evening, while you were on the phone to your mother. And,"
she pulled the door open,
"I didn't vote for you either."
The look on his face unnerved her. Out in the hall, she slipped on clogs, the first pair of shoes she could find, and was through the front door before he could catch up. 9. The journey took Crystal back to her childhood. She had made this trip daily to St. Thomas's, all on her own, on the bus. She knew when the Abbey would come into sight, and she pointed it out to Robbie.
"See the big ruined castle?"
Robbie was hungry, but slightly distracted by the excitement of being on a bus. Crystal held his hands tightly. She had promised him food when they got off at the other end, but she did not know where she would get it. Perhaps she could borrow money from Fats for a bag of crisps, not to mention the return bus fare.
"I went to school here," she told Robbie,
while he wiped his fingers on the dirty windows, making abstract patterns. "And you'll go to school here too." When they rehoused her, because of her pregnancy, they were almost certain to give her another Fields house. Nobody wanted to buy them, they were so run down. But Crystal saw this as a good thing, because in spite of their dilapidation, it would put Robbie and the baby in the catchment area for St. Thomas's. Anyway, Fats's parents would almost certainly give her enough money for a washing machine once she had their grandchild. They might even get a television. The bus rolls down a slope towards Padfoot, and Crystal caught a glimpse of the glittering river, briefly visible before the road sank too low. She had been disappointed when she joined the rowing eight that they did not practice on the oar, but on the dirty old canal in Yarville.
"Here we are," Crystal told Robbie, as the bus turned slowly into the flower-decked square.
Fats had forgotten that waiting in front of the black cannon meant standing opposite Mollison and Lowe's and the copper kettle. There was more than an hour to go until midday, when the cafes opened on Sundays, but Fats did not know how early Andrew had to arrive for work. He had no desire to see his oldest friend this morning, so he skulked down the side of the pub out of sight, and only emerged when the bus arrived. It pulled away, revealing Crystal and a small, dirty-looking boy. Nonplussed, Fats loped towards them.
"He's my brother," said Crystal, aggressively, in response to something she had seen in Fats's face.
Fats made another mental adjustment to what gritty and authentic life meant. He had been fleetingly taken with the idea of knocking Crystal up and showing Cubby what real men were able to achieve casually without effort. But this little boy, clinging to his sister's hand and leg, disconcerted him. Fats wished that he'd not agreed to meet her. She was making him ridiculous. He would rather have gone back to that stinking, squalid house of hers, now that he saw her in the square.
"Have you got any money?"
Crystal demanded. "What?" said Fats. His wits were slow with tiredness. He could not remember now why he'd wanted to sit up all night. His tongue was throbbing with all the cigarettes he had smoked.
"Money," repeated Crystal. "He's hungry and I've lost a fiver. Pay you back."
Fats stuck a hand in his jeans pocket and touched a crumpled banknote. Somehow he did not want to look too flush in front of Crystal, so he ferreted deeper for change and finally came up with a small amount of silver and coppers. They went to the tiny newsagent's two streets from the square, and Fats hung around outside while Crystal bought Robbie crisps and a packet of Rolos. None of them said a word, not even Robbie, who seemed fearful of Fats. At last, when Crystal had handed her brother the crisps, she said to Fats,
"Where will we go?"
Surely, he thought, she could not mean that they were going to shag. Not with a boy there. He had had some idea of taking her to the cubbyhole. It was private, and it would be a final desecration of his and Andrew's friendship. He owed nothing to anyone anymore. But he balked at the idea of fucking in front of a three-year-old.
"He'll be all right," said Crystal. "He's got chocolates now."
"No, later," she said to Robbie, who was whining for the Rolos still in her hand, "when you've had the crisps." They walked off down the road in the direction of the old stone bridge.
"He'll be all right," Crystal repeated. "He does as he's told, don't you?"
she said loudly to Robbie.
"Want chocolates?" he said.
"Yeah, in a minute."
She could tell that Fats needed cajoling today. She had known on the bus that bringing Robbie, however necessary, would be difficult.
"What you been up to?"
she asked. "Party last night," said Fats.
"Yeah, who was there?"
He yawned widely, and she had to wait for an answer. "Half Price, Sukhvinder Juwanda, Gaia Borden."
"Does she live in Padford?"
asked Crystal sharply.
"Yeah, in Hope Street," said Fats.
He knew because Andrew had let it slip where she lived. Andrew had never said that he liked her, but Fats had watched him watching Gaia almost constantly in the few classes they shared. He had noticed Andrew's extreme self-consciousness around her, and whenever she was mentioned. Crystal, though, was thinking about Gaia's mother, the only social worker she had ever liked, the only one who had got through to her mother. She lived in Hope Street, the same as Nana Kath. She was probably there right now. What if... But Kay had left them. Matty was their social worker again. Anyway, you weren't supposed to bother them at home. Shane Tully had once followed his social worker to her house, and he'd got a restraining order for his pains. But then, Shane had earlier tried to heave a brick through the woman's car window. And, Crystal reasoned, squinting as the road turned and the river dazzled her eyes with thousands of blood.